Morning, Jennifer.
Hey, I just clicked on something called AI, so hopefully I didn't like start the AI companion.
You blew it all up.
Oh no. Yeah. Here, wait a second.
Hey, Autumn.
Hello.
Hi. How are we this fine morning?
Plugging along,
Yeah.
just playing catch up with all the Folio stuff, trying to clear out my Slack.
Oh, sounds like my email inbox. I have turned on transcripts just to make it easier to touch up notes after the fact, FYI.
Charlotte, what is that on your mug? That the moose is a moose?
It's a moose, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Swedish artist doing these wonderful animal drawings. And she is actually called Charlotte Nicolin. And so it's my name. And then her last name is
Oh.
my daughter's name. But she has a very nice shop in Gamlestaden in Stockholm. So.
Nice looking mug. It was so small on my screen. I didn't want to guess at the animal because I didn't want it to be some kind of
No.
Rorschach test for me and reveal too much about myself.
But I have a, a fox. I have a, what do I have more? I have a wolf. I have different illustrations here, so.
Just what mood you're in for the day.
My kids also say tell me, "Mom, I think you have the animal theme as your decoration going on."
We'll give it a couple minutes to let people finish rolling in, and then we'll get going. All right, we could probably get started. But everyone's gonna need to bear with me today because this is my first time leading a PC meeting. So we'll go through this adventure together and see what happens. Alexis is here. If I get way off the rails, she can. Okay, I'm gonna start by sharing my screen. Can you guys see okay. All right. So it looks like we have a note taker for today. Autumn has said that she would do it, which is awesome. Thank you. And I didn't say welcome before. Welcome. And are there any specific announcements? That anybody has.
So I just have one. Just, we have the information sessions for Wolfcom presenters. I kind of messed up yesterday. I forgot I had an OLF Zoom and I used my UMass Zoom. Anyway, when people found us, but next Friday we we're all set. So session two, and I put a link to the slides and the OLF Zoom will take place tomorrow. 10 to 11 a.m. And even if you're not a presenter, this has some good information, like a map of how to get to the reception, and for those in the councils, it also says like how to get to the administrative center for where the council meetings will be held. So you can always take a look as well, Charlotte.
So I have a meeting conflict and I'm a presenter in two sessions. Is it possible? Will you record tomorrow's meeting?
Yeah,
Yes.
and we are. I already recorded the UMass one. It's in a zip file, but the OLF one will be recorded normally. I
Okay.
did put I did upload the zip file for yesterday's recording. But if you want to view the OLF one, that's probably better. We are confirming one thing with the AV and to make sure that, because there's a laptop that you have to use that are in the rooms. So people are a little worried about the Zoom, but so we're just confirming that. And any updates will be posted on WolfCon conference chat. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Jennifer. Any other announcements? Okay. We have talked at our last PC planning meeting about making updates from liaisons, standing agenda item. We have this on here to just to go ahead and just ask the question one way or the other if there's a TC, CC, or release management update. It does look like we get to hear from Jennifer again because it does look like we have an RMS update. And you, it was great for you to add this to the notes. You want to just maybe walk us through it just a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Jeremy. So I'll be trying to add notes for whenever RMS meets, or sometimes we do approve issues to go in the CSPs. So I'll put those down as well. This is something new. And just because there's so much information, this is to help with information flow and communication. So RMS met this week. Of the major topic was the delay for Trillium. So you can see the dashboard. I put a link to that. Now, this delay affects, of course, the going live for the National Library of Sweden. So that group met and kind of discussed, like, how can we help National Library of Sweden go live in March 2026? So it was decided to kind of backport the functionality that they need to a Sunflower CSP, primarily number two and perhaps number three. So, RMS and Charlotte and National Library of Sweden are going to work on that. In terms of the delay with Trillium, the Technical Council is inviting anyone who's free to talk about this. And, in terms of support as well as, the delay. So I put here the time and a link to the proposal. In not directly related to RMS, but I still put this in. There is some discussion on alternatives to Kong. So I put the wiki page on that as well for your information. And I am not the person to talk about Kong. Maybe King Kong. I like King Kong, but so if someone wants to explain what's going on there, please take it away. Harry.
Would you like me to explain?
That would be awesome. Thank you, Harry.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Good morning, if it's morning for you. So, what has happened, right? One of the components that make up what we call Eureka, which is the new Folio platform, is a piece called Kong. And Kong is an API gateway. And Kong is supported by a company that does the majority of the development work. And then all that code is released as open source. Now, what has happened is in the past, the company that does the majority of the development work on Kong released builds for different platforms that really the open source community or anyone that wants to use Kong can take advantage of. And, you know, my guess is they started this way back when, thinking this will just help jumpstart interest. And then at some point, the open source community would probably take over the build process. That never really happened. And so they decided they are no longer going to provide these builds. But the code is still available. They still release the code as open source. It's still an open source project. Nothing has really changed there other than the build process. So in thinking about this, you know, there's a couple of options here. One, you know, we need to investigate, what does it take to build it ourselves? And so we did. And there is actually a spike called Kong 34 in Jira, where, you know, we need to test building Kong from source to see what that's like. And so hold up, let me dig up that link here real quick, because we already did that. And we published the instructions.
Hey, Harry, here. Is it spike 33 or 34? Because I put a link to 33 in the...
No, it's 34, this one. Okay. This is different, okay? So what you have is perfectly fine. But then there's this. And so what happened was we ran through it, we built it, and we published how to build Kong under Ubuntu, which is probably the most widely used Linux platform out there. It's probably about as generic as it can possibly get. These are not instructions specific to AWS or anything like that. And so we've tested it, it works, we published it. Anyone that wants to build Kong can build Kong, right? So the other thing is we decided that we should investigate alternatives, because who knows what's going to happen in the future. And this is a common problem with all open source projects, especially when you rely on other open source projects. As Folio, we've actually encountered this before. The last one was when the licensing changed for Elasticsearch, where it no longer was open source. And so we had to switch Folio to open source. So we figured, let's do some pre-planning. Let's make sure we have a mitigation plan in place in case something changes in the future. And so that is, Jennifer, what you posted, which is Kong 33. And is that link here? Yeah,
it is
Kong 33. And so we decided to take a look at what other alternatives are out there in case it comes to that. We're not in that situation at all, but it's good to have a plan, okay? They did an investigation. There is one in particular they decided was probably a good replacement in the future if we ever have to replace Kong, and it's Apache, and I can't pronounce this. It's API6 or API6, I don't know. And what happens is there's actually also a Kong 35, which is another spike, which is a deeper investigation into that. And there's actually a couple others, another one called Glue, for example, that they're interested in looking in as well. And again, just to be ready in case we have to in the future. Now, overall, again, as I stated, this is fairly normal for open source projects. This tends to happen, and so you need to be flexible. And in many ways, this is really a vindication of the Eureka approach, because with Eureka, we move to single purpose components, not having one component trying to do it all, just making sure we have a collection of components where each component is doing one thing and doing one thing well. That way, if that component has to be changed, it's not very difficult to replace it. And so in this case, we don't need a replacement for a gateway that does many things or a full replacement of Eureka. We just need a replacement for one part, possibly if an emergency situation occurs in the future, which is just an API gateway. And the good news is there's a bunch of them, and you can see them on that list on that spike, Kong 33. And so again, we're just looking to be a little proactive and just to be ready at one point in the future. But at this point, there's no reason to change. Eureka is working just fine. It's live. The world's largest library is running on it. And, we've got no reason to change Kong whatsoever. And we've also proven that if anyone wants to, they can build it, and they can build it quite easily. I'm sure I could do it, and I'm not a developer these days, and I'm pretty sure there are a number of people on the call that could do it as well, following the instructions that are there. But anyway, that's kind of the background. If you have any questions, please ask.
Thanks so much, Harry. That provides some really great context. And thank you, Jennifer, for that RMS update. Alexis, do you have anything from the CC?
We had a pretty short meeting on Monday, basically just talking about the agenda for the Tri-Council meeting at WolfCon. And that is, at least there's a beginning of that on their meeting. There's a kind of shell agenda that they started that has a few general topics on it that I can share that link. But basically that's all we talked about. And it was a pretty short meeting. So that's it from the CC.
There was one thing that came up. I'm not sure if this was a conversation that predated you being a liaison there or not. That I, at least for my part, I def it came up in the context of community-driven development, and it would definitely be something I'd be interested in hearing more about if it gets talked about more. But it's this idea of pass-through fees from hosting providers as a potential funding source. I think maybe an MOU is being worked on or something like that, but yeah.
There was a proposal. So 2 weeks ago when we met, there was a presentation of a proposal for hosting providers to add at various levels, I think depending on the size of the institution or the library, line items in their regular billing to their customers. Of, I believe it was like $500, $1,000, or $2,000, again, depending on the size of the institution, fees for sort of community costs, basically supporting the community. And so this isn't membership. It was like, it was more like the community needs things like AWS and all and other, doing Bug Fest and all these things that we need to do. And so here's how your institution is supporting that. And so it would be the proposal was that it would be there by default, and institutions could opt out if either they chose not to, or they some maybe potentially legally could not pay in that way. So I'm not sure where that proposal is right now, but
Okay.
that was at least shared with us.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I'm sorry to put you on the spot with that. It just I was like, man, what's going on with
No
that?
problem. I mean, I thought it was really interesting, and it was not something I had heard about before. And I know they're also working on things with membership, but this was something a little bit different. So it was interesting.
Awesome. Thank you. And I know Todd is not with us. I don't know if anyone has any updates from the TC. I know that the TC is inviting us, as Jennifer mentioned, to participate in a discussion on port cycles. So you can check the Slack for the details on that. They've kind of spread that invitation around. Anything else by way of updates? Awesome. Just one quick housekeeping item, though I don't really have a lot to update on this, just that it's something that we have been talking about and would like to kind of spend some time maybe digging into. I think if we have more time today, we maybe could do it right now in the context of this meeting. But we are talking about changing the way that we interface potentially with the SIGs instead of kind of doing a season of SIG updates, or like a larger update where we talk to more SIGs, doing something like a rolling update where there's just a regularly scheduled update from SIGs on the calendar, and we maybe speak to just one or two at a time and just kind of cycle through all of them. The goal being, one, just that it kind of keeps SIG stuff on our mind, more consistently, and then also possibly that we are able to dedicate a little bit more time and attention to an individual SIG at any given time that we find ourselves talking to them. So just to let you guys know that this is an idea that's kind of in the works, and Yeah, so if we do make that change, it doesn't jar or surprise anyone. Updates on active initiatives. We have more active initiatives in the CDD, but it's the only one that I'm directly involved with. So I threw it down on the agenda just to give an update here. And that is that we have decided that there are three major proposals for community-driven development, community-directed development that have been talked about kind of throughout the councils and the Folio community. One from Tom Kramer, one from Mike Gorrell, and one from the working group that I authored. And there is some overlap between them, but after hearing about these several times, it seemed pretty obvious that they were not necessarily mutually exclusive proposals, that there was kind of a lot of potential for, good ideas from all the proposals to move forward. So we decided that we wanted to take a stab at synthesizing the ideas from these proposals into a new proposal that kind of brought all of that stuff into one framework. And so I have a link to a working document. It's definitely an in-progress thing, but if anyone wants to take a peek at it, it definitely takes a lot of the ideas from those initial three documents, brings them forward, and then there are some new things in there. What we've decided we would like to do is there's two sessions at WolfCon related to community-driven development, one for an update from the working group, the CDD working group, and another one to go over Mike Gorrell's contributor network proposal. What we've decided to do is actually combine those two thematically. So it's like a part one and part two session. And the first one will go over basically this new proposal and kind of the historical context of the first three proposals. And in the second one, we'll do more of a workshop discussion where we try to engage the community and feedback as far as next steps or ways to improve the proposal. So the language on those will be changing soon on Sketch as soon as I can get Jennifer the updated language. But I just wanted to give you all an update on what's happening with community-driven development. And think just to make sure we have time for everything. We're doing all right, I suppose. Are there any other that I didn't list here, active initiatives that people are involved with that they would like to share something about? Okay. Well, speaking of SIG updates, that is what we have on the agenda today. And we should have some representatives from both the resource access SIG and the reporting SIG here. And I am so sorry, I did not see who we had from either group. Who do we have here from the resource access SIG?
Hi, Jeremy. This is Susan Kimball. I'm a co-convener, and Cornelia is also here. Do you want to introduce yourself, Cornelia? I think she's here.
Yeah, yes, I'm here. I'm the other co-convener of Resource Access.
Great. So this is my first time presenting to y'all. So I believe that I'm here to talk about what our prioritization is. Is that correct? Like dig in a little bit more about the prioritization. Okay, perfect, because that's what I've come prepared to do. So we and Cornelia, please interrupt me at any time if you have anything else you want to say. So we were in the middle of the summer when we got the request to get these prioritizations. We scrambled and did our best. I think I can say pretty confidently that this doesn't represent our best prioritization effort. This was sort of a quick and dirty, how can we get quick input from everyone basically who comes to meetings or is on Slack? Like those are the only people we hold. And knowing that these had to be active tickets in Jira, they also represent some pretty narrow amounts of work, which we may have configured that differently if we had more time to plan. So those are all the caveats. That said, with our quick voting exercise, we came up with five. The first one is the ability to batch renew loans for multiple patrons across. A lot of us came to Folio being able to do automatic renewals, and sort of batch renewal is sort of the next best thing. Like, can we quickly renew for a set of patrons in a particular using criteria that are set, either at first manually initiate that, and then ideally in some sort of automated way. But the first step of the work is to be able to batch renew. The second is an inventory search filtering on item loan type. So loan type is both permanent and temporary. The item loan type is something that is really critical to the work of what we do in Access. So all circulation is sort of driven by loan type, and it's not really used by lots of other units, even though it's implemented by catalogers and put into practice there. The implications are heavily on the circulation side of the house. So we often want to pull together these items and then take action on them. I think that lists and things like that have been developed since then make this make workarounds more possible, but there's still desire to have this functionality. And it feels like a pretty low lift. One hugely impactful one is the third item on the list, which is printing pick slips, which are requests where we're paging things from our stacks. They currently come out in whatever the hell order they want to. I think it's in out, whatever. I'm sure there's a rhyme and reason to it. But the method of having to manually sort hundreds of pick slips is quite a lift for my library, which is very small, and I can't even imagine. I mean, I think there are technological workarounds at larger institutions who have resources to put that in place. But being able to get those sorted by their location, effective location, and then by shelving order or call number would be amazing. The fourth one is having multiple items on a request notice to a single patron. This one we talked about recently and is a bit of a lift because right now they're triggered. Request notices are triggered for pickup as soon as an item is checked in and put on the hold shelf at its service point pickup location. They would re require some sort of queuing of those to wait till that session is ended, some period of time to be able to batch those and throw them out as one email instead of, 15 or 20 in a row. And then finally, the title level request hold are not included. Only the item level request holds are in the request column in the loans display. And so you don't get a full picture of that. And that was sort of falls into the category of development that happens after we went kind of our first version and some gaps in sort of back filling. We see this a lot with a circulation log that it wrote this new functionality, but it doesn't get propagated through all the places that it needs to show up throughout the Access realm of apps. Those are the top five, quick and dirty. Anything I missed, Cornelia, or does anyone have any questions about those?
I have a question about a specific one, and I at this moment in time, I kind of wish I had been asking this question of every site that has done these priority updates. But it just occurred to me, I'm really interested in like the process that the SIGs are going through in order to pick these prioritizations, and I'm just wondering, like, how difficult was it for y'all? I mean, what was your experience like? Was it just very obvious for everybody? Like, these are the pain points, or was it a lot of deliberation?
So we didn't have a time for a lot of deliberation. I will just say
Sure.
that we have been in this very extended prioritization process And we were trying to be thoughtful about it because, as you probably know, RA is one of the original SIGs, and we have tickets in JIRA that go all the way back to the beginning, including many that have never been developed. And so we are in this multi-pronged approach, but it's sort of sequential where we're trying to be diligent about going through and closing tickets that we don't think we need anymore. And we have sort of paused our real prioritization until we kind of get that process done. It may be backwards, like maybe we need to prioritize the actual prioritization first, but we didn't want to prioritize things that we didn't think needed to be done anymore. So that was tricky. But we are still doing that process. And then we also, for this, we sort of did a sidebar process of identifying the ones that were, geez, I can't remember how we ended up with the ones on the spreadsheet. We ended up in an RA SIG meeting pulling out the ones we thought were the highest priorities and met the criteria of having a ticket. And we put it out for folks to rank their top, I can't remember, top 10, top five. Cornelia, fill me in on my memory gap here.
We pulled part of those tickets from a running gap list that we've been talking about on and off for like the last 2 years. And then others could add what was on their minds. And then we had a pointing system, I think, and every library had a number of points they could give to how many tickets they wanted. I'm not sure. Yeah,
I think that's
that
right.
was
I think
great.
everybody had 25 points and they could distribute them across all the tickets. And we had between 20 and 25 tickets. Like we didn't have a ton of tickets.
So civilized. That's awesome.
We did our best. I don't know that it got the best result because, like I said, some of these are very minute pieces of work, including some that have really viable workarounds, like number two has a pretty viable workaround. So, Harry,
And so
oh,
no
sorry.
new just quickly, so no new tickets were created in order to accomplish this prioritization. Y'all based it solely on tickets that already existed in Jira.
I'm looking at the numbers. The number five is a relatively new ticket, but I don't think it was created newly. If we had more time, I would have advocated for us to create a ticket that bundled together some of this work under one umbrella ticket, because some of it is related. So there are pieces of other tickets that are closely related to some of these that we just didn't have time to put into one thing.
You're figuring out how to game the system.
No, best utilize, leverage.
I'm sorry for cutting you off, Harry.
Go ahead,
That's okay.
Harry.
So I'm really glad to see Thomas's post that you were able to close a ton of tickets. That is perfect. And thank you for doing that. So my question, so your priority one item, the batch renew as an example. What does the SIG think the next steps are? Or could the SIG use a recommendation?
So I think this is a few of these fall into the category of large universities that have local resources have workarounds. Like they're writing APIs, they're doing this themselves. It's all great, except for those of us, many of us that don't have those resources, don't have a viable workaround, ourselves included. And so I am not a developer. I don't know. I mean, it could be done through the APIs. I would look to the community and those of us that have sorted it out and solved it locally may be able to speak more to that possibilities.
So I guess what I was thinking is, so if that's the SIG's number one priority, what would be great is there another step that could be taken to get it closer to actually being built, right? Which I think is what I'm hearing you say, Susan.
Yeah.
And so I guess, has there any thought yet been put into fleshing UX prod 3651 out in much more detail? Because, for instance, ability to batch renew lo loans across multiple patrons and library users sounds simple. But if you're a developer, and you dive into this and you start building this, it's not that simple. You know, what do we do, for example, when there's loan rules that state you can't renew this item for this person? You know, how do you handle all the different situations? And I guess if the SIG could think through these and document how this should work, how data should flow through the system, how notifications should be, I don't know, I'm guessing, notifications possibly sent either, well, probably both, right, to the librarian and the end user. You know, the more we have fleshed out, the easier it is for a development team to take a look at this and create a job estimate and maybe ask, you know, some questions to help refine it a little bit, the easier it might be to actually take this on. And I think that would be a huge next step into actually making this actionable and not really having to require, you know, a product owner, which are always in short supply. You can probably take it 90% of the way forward and make it something that's actually actionable, which greatly increases the what is wrong with me? The percentage, no, the probability that someone might just take it and pull it because they've got a little extra bandwidth, or that maybe it could be estimated and, you know, maybe some libraries could pool some funding together and actually pay to have it built, right? Because, you know, I'm looking at UX Prod 4462 printing pick slips. I don't know the history of that and how it was built. And so take everything I'm saying here as a grain of, you know, a grain of salt here, but it could very well be that it wasn't thought through really well, or, you know, whoever initially built it either didn't ask the right questions, you know, didn't identify the details, and maybe those key features were missed because they just, you know, didn't have a clue. And anyway,
No,
my
that's
two
really
cents worth.
helpful. I appreciate that, Harry. If you look at these, four of these five are in draft, and I should have acknowledged that from the get-go. And that is part, Tom mentioned this in the chat, that we one of our tags as we are going through these one by one is RA, further refinement. Like we need to refine a lot of these, and this is why we wanted to do this, the prioritization, so we can prioritize that refinement. Because the reality is we do not have a lot of people on the SIG who have the skills to really flesh this out in the way. Like we've, as in the larger community, there's been a lot of turnover from the initial people who really started writing these in full detail, and product, some of them product owners. And I myself don't have the skills or the knowledge to do this. And so we need to, we're working on that, and we are sharing information. Like Tom is our go-to because he's the only one that knows how to write these.
Well,
And so.
but you know, the key here is I don't think as librarians we should even expect you to write requirements that a developer can go off and write code with, right? That's I don't think that's reasonable. But what I do think is, you know, as librarians, you can sit down and think, what are the things that I want to have happen? You know, what are my experiences in the past? You know, do I want it to work the same way? Would I like to see it different in the future? You know, could it be better than we've ever done it before or any other system we've used? And, you know, try to work through and document those things. And then, you know, a huge part of defining the problem that needs to get solved here, which is UX Prod 3651, is taken care of. And it makes it a whole lot easier for someone to pick it up and run with it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's some great points. And you're absolutely right, Harry. If you leave it up to developers to make these decisions when implementing, somehow and possibly 200% of the time they'll do it the wrong way.
Yeah, they won't be the best decisions, not at all. And
Not
so
their fault.
this is your chance to really shape the future of this functionality. And so take advantage of it.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I won't take any more of your time. I'll just mention that there's also a course reserves line here. And again, this was course reserves is a subgroup of the resource access group. And we were not sure at what level. So again, we're gaming the system. Jeremy, we got five more priorities in there. That is a group, that is a piece of work that was developed once, amazingly so, by Index Data. And then
but it was contract work and it's done, and so we haven't had any development since. So that's there for awareness, but I won't say more about that in detail. Thanks, everyone.
One interesting fact about that one. Anya Arnold and a group of folks got together years ago and wrote up a multi-page document that describes what course reserves is. And so the Fenway Libraries were able to get estimates for it, and they put up the money to get it built. And so that's why we have what we have today. True, it needs more work, but that's actually probably the best example that I can think of as to why, if the SIGs can take these further and further document them, there's it increases the chance that something will actually be worked on.
Great, great point. A good example of a community driven development. All right. Thank y'all so much. That was fantastic. And I believe we have someone here from the reporting SIG.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Jeremy. Shall I go ahead?
Yeah, dive
Okay,
right in.
I see you've got reporting up, so thank you so much. I want to just remind everyone that reporting the MetaDB project, we deal with MetaDB and all other reporting tools as well, and in-app reports and ListApp and anything where you're taking data out of the system, is all fair game for reporting SIG. We do focus a lot in the development world on MetaDB and is that getting developed per our needs. And so this is the interesting part of MetaDB is with reporting app and with the data coming from Folio, there are interdependencies now that are significant. And so when you look at priorities for the reporting SIG in terms of software development, you have to look at it as software development for both MetaDB by index data and for Folio by the Folio development teams. So it let me give you an example. So one of the things, the chief concern that we have right now in reporting SIG is data privacy. So data streams into our MetaDB reporting databases, and we are focusing on how that data is used by different institutions, and in particular, trying to reduce the exposure to patron identifiers because most libraries require that we keep data on patrons private and as much as we can. At the same time, functionally in the library, we need to use patron data in order to do our work. For instance, if you have a finer fee associated with a loan, you need to know who to charge for that. So it is so the main priority right now is data privacy, and that has that project, that topic is complex. There are many layers and many different pieces that go into that direction and request. So one of the things that we understand MetaDB to be working on, I think I saw Charlotte here, so feel free to jump in, Charlotte. But in order to for European colleagues to make sure that the MetaDB data is GDPR compliant, there is some development work that's going on right now with index data. That naturally lends itself to supporting our goal of data privacy in that anonymizing data helps keep it private. So that has been targeted for software version 1.5. for the MetaDB software. And right now, as I understand it, MetaDB 1.4 has been released, but it's in beta and still being tested. So 1.5 is on its way. I want to just also bring up, I think just there are two ticketing systems for this now that we need to pay attention to. So the MetaDB project issues log is a GitHub repository issues log where software development for MetaDB is tracked and requests for new development are taken in. I also have links to a number of other JIRAs here that are related to data privacy and MetaDB. These are the places where Folio and MetaDB are working together. So with our loans anonymization, for instance, in settings in Folio, what that does in MetaDB is it anonymizes, it basically changes user IDs on loans that have been closed to null. And that effectively anonymizes data for loans, which was a request a while ago. In MetaDB, it anonymizes the current row of data, but because MetaDB stores historical data, the historical data is not anonymized. And this has been raised up as an issue by several institutions who've identified this. And there, are you really don't want to start running, you really don't want to be deleting data on your reporting database due to the risk of impacting data integrity across that data warehouse. And so this is a direction that we have taken just to get our patron data anonymized. And we did it with heavy testing, that sort of thing. But it's not really, that was an emergency measure, if you will. It's not really a direction that we want to go. So we are in the reporting state kind of raising up this issue to get some more eyes on it from a development perspective for both MetaDB developers and Folio developers to be thinking about how can we anonymize data, provide more data privacy features that impact both Folio and MetaDB. Because those of us who are running Folio with MetaDB get our data from Folio, it impacts MetaDB. Ideally, if you, in the loans example, for instance, could take the development of the Folio loans feature so that you could select historical data, delete that historical data too. That would be fantastic. And it could cleanly change that data before it even gets to the MetaDB database, then there's less concern about impacting data integrity. So it gets complicated quickly. Those of you who've worked with data warehouses understand the direction I'm taking this. So this the tickets that are in there now have to do with future development. And so I bring that in so that we can make sure that we are working together to anonymize data in a way that really benefits most institutions. So UX Prod 1041 has to do with requests. And request anonymization is being developed. And so as we develop request anonymization in Folio, an important consideration is going to be how does that data stream into a MetaDB server, your reporting server. That has to do with that. And then UX Prod 4302 also has to do with requests. And then the other area, so basically loans, requests and fines and fees are major areas where patron privacy has to be looked at. The third ticket is for fees and fines. So how do we anonymize data? And I would say after our analysis, that's probably the most complicated area of anonymization. So those three tickets are there because it's all part of the larger issue, but that is the major priority. In order to work together, institutions who participate in reporting SIG coming together on this issue, we have created a subgroup, the MetaDB Data Privacy Subgroup. And so we are meeting regularly to take a look at all of this collectively, analyze what needs to be done to write up tickets for developers and so forth. Another area that is impacted by this is the reporting app, which is in Folio and connects to a MetaDB database. So the question is, how do we ensure that data privacy is kept up when somebody uses a report through the reporting app? You know, that is a little easier to control because you have functionality in Folio that is controlling what report users see. But that's been also an interesting area of development that's related to all of this. The other piece here is on the MetaDB side. You know, 1.4 provides more granular user permissions. Basically, you can grant or revoke access to schemas and tables using MetaDB 1.4, which is a major step forward in this data privacy realm. We've also been looking at more role development features and things that would support this overall ability to make sure that that data privacy is continuing to provide the features that people need to ensure that at their institutions. So that's the big one. And you'll see here that the numbers are out of order. We have version 1.4 data array extraction as priority two. We moved that during our meeting. There has been a continuous effort at Index Data making great strides on data array extraction for MetaDB software development to make more of those data points into nice columns instead of JSON data array blobs, if you will. And so we'd like to see that continue, of course, but that is priority two now. So we'd rather have the data privacy first. And so that's really the main communication point. The other thing that we've discussed in reporting SIG has been in-app report UIs being inconsistent. And so last meeting we discussed this and Jenny just brought up that cross-app SIG is also taking a look at this. So we would love to partner with you on taking a look at the UIs that generate the download to CSV functionality and helping to set those up so that the UIs are more consistent. And that's all I've got for you. Are there any questions?
My takeaway is privacy is important. That's what I'm taking.
I hope
away
I made that clear. Yeah.
Yes. we definitely have a few minutes for questions. I have a couple that popped to mind, but I'll let other people go first if there are any questions.
I'm just now looking at the chat. Did people post stuff in chat? Or I see a lot of things about Kong.
There's some stuff about the Thomas mentioned that the privacy SIG, there's some efforts to get that started up again. So there might be an opportunity for intersection between y'all's work and reporting.
That. Yes. Yeah. That's Jen. So she's also from Cornell. So we've talked about that.
It occurs to me that priority number one and priority number two might possibly have a relationship, just in that data array extraction seems like it could be an opportunity for anonymization. Have y'all explored that angle at all?
I couldn't speak to that. That would be more of a question for I'm not sure Charlotte knows more from the index data or Peter. Just that's more of an index data
Yeah.
question.
This
I'm not sure.
observation is like 30 seconds old, so I'm sure people who have thought about this a lot more might be able to tell me why that's a bad idea.
I don't have any insights. Sorry.
Okay. All
Also,
right.
I would need to ask either Nasip or Mike Taylor about this.
Thomas?
This is semi-related, but not directly related. A lot of the, I know for MetaDB, a lot of the transformation has to take place is there's a lot of JSONB fields within the Folio database. And from what I've been told by others is that is because of originally in the project, we were using MongoDB, and then it got switched over to ProQuest, and they just kind of migrated those MongoDB documents into JSONB fields. I kind of wonder if part would probably help with MetaDB, help with anonymization, and a whole bunch of other smaller things is looking at the database structure for the individual models and where possible breaking those JSONB fields out into actual fields and subtables. I know I'm not sure what the extraction layer is at the module level, and the I'm sorry, the interface layer between the modules and the database, and how much of a lift that would be, but I kind of wonder if that would help solve some of these other problems. And I know one of the other issues reporting runs into is when there's a schema change, they sometimes don't get updated right away. So, Kalia has been great. She's trying to figure out a way of getting that more documented for them. But if it was a more flat structure, it might be easier just to scan the database and see what has changed.
It's I can tell you, I'll lean on my developer background and tell you that it would be a tremendous effort to move away from, at this point, for Folio to move away from JSONB. I'm not saying that, I mean, nothing is technically impossible, but Folio is pretty entrenched in that representation at the mod at the module level at this point. But you're not the first person to suggest that that might be a good idea.
There's also thoughts. I don't know how true, correct they are, and I'm not the person, to be the last word in this area, but I've, also read many times where there's a belief that if we could move away from JSONB, performance across the board, database performance, and Folio would increase substantially as well, too. But
The
so
general kind of truism is that when a project is young, it can oftentimes make development more expedient to use a more flexible schema representation, like a document store, so something like MongoDB or JSONB. But that as it matures, and you get some more certainty about your schema structure, it kind of gets nailed down. It becomes safer to represent it in a more static way, like a representational, or sorry, relational database kind of representation. And you will have some performance gains by doing that. So, that it maybe it's time for Folio to explore that, but it would definitely have a huge impact on projects like MetaDB.
it would. And it's also possible too, is that this could be, I know that there is a it's still floating around, there is an app formalization and a combining of smaller modules into larger modules within Folio. And for that, database schemes are going to have to be merged anyway. So it might actually be a logical time to look at the structures, move them to more of a traditional database structure as you're merging them into larger apps, because you're having to do that re-architecture. But yeah, as you said, Jeremy, I've read the same thing, as like JSONB is great and Mongo is great, but as you start to scale up to larger and larger apps, the overhead for the index has a tendency to slow down the database. The ProQuest has made really good strides in the and their JSONB stuff.
I have kind of a business question about our priorities. If I can just go back to our thing, we have two ways of in reporting SIG. Issues are dealt with either on a MetaDB project issues log or as JIRA tickets. If the product council is helping to position these priorities with developers, do they need to have everything as JIRA tickets, or can they deal with project with an issues log and tickets together? Do we need to do more on that front to, you know, keep it all in JIRA or whatever?
I think that before work gets done on these things, they will need to become JIRAs. So, if they aren't currently, then at some point in the process, they will need to be. I guess you're getting further down the road if you have them represented here on the log as a JIRA ticket. There's nothing saying that something like these log entries here, couldn't be taken by somebody else and that work done after the fact. I mean, you're still representing your priorities here, but it might help your case out maybe a little bit more if they were your tickets. That's my intuition on it, Charlotte. And this is the last word because we're at that.
I also have to run for another meeting, so I'd say. I think it's a really good question, Sharon, and it goes for all of the six who has now listed these priorities. I think we as PC should be responsible for that. We can report on, okay, how many of these prioritized features has actually then been lifted? Bringing this forward and with a delay of a Trillium, so realistically, these features would be work for umbrella leave. I think all the six could work on refining and making sure that the tickets get out of draft and be able to be picked up by development teams. But the PC who has initiated this big work by the six to do all of this, we are also then responsible for to see if that the work is actually being picked up by the development teams. So we should, the PC should be your advocate now when you have done the priority.
Thank you so much. Scott and I will work with Mike Rell on that. We've talked a little bit about that. Do we need to make these tickets? We'll work with Mike to do, or you or whoever we're supposed to work with. We'll ask.
But my comment was not just reporting. My comment was actually for all six, because I think otherwise it will just be, again, on paper. And plans, et cetera, et cetera, but no actual work is being done.
Awesome. Thank you, folks, so much. And thanks to the SIGs for their hard work with these prioritizations. And that's a wrap for our meeting. So you guys have a good remainder of your day.
Bye. Okay.